Dwight Stone's a two-time Olympic medalist in the high jump. He's now an analyst for ESPN, joins us. Hello, Dwight. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You competed at a time where the East Germans were the kings of doping. Is there a comparative in any way, shape, or form between what is going on now with the Russians and what happened with the then Soviet bloc East Germans?
Well, I think that the comparisons are probably apt. I don't really think that we've really had seen a change in how the systemic doping has been happening amongst the East Bloc athletes, primarily Russia. It's a great propaganda tool for the East Germans, and it certainly was for the Soviet bloc back in the Cold War days. And my entire athletic career was during the Cold War.
Right.
So I don't believe that it's really so much different. And obviously, it's been exposed in the area of track and field to the point, and early enough, that their entire federation has been banned from competing in the Olympic Games, save for maybe Daria Klishna, the long jumper. It wasn't discovered, or they didn't feel good enough. The IOC didn't feel strongly enough about the other federations in the Olympic family to ban the entire delegation. But I think banning their track and field team is a significant step, is a significant slap in the face, is a significant homage to the fact that we're not going to tolerate doping and that we have to protect our clean athletes all around the world. But let's face it, Russia's not the only team in the world that's doping. It's just the only team that maybe is systematically state-sponsored doping.
Do you think the IOC's decision to turn it over to the individual governing bodies of the sports, essentially, other than the track and field, was the right decision? Because there is, I mean, look, at the most people who know very little about this and are not impacted by it, other than they get interested in the Olympics every 4 years, I mean, the first reaction is, you know, kick all the Russians out. They're all guilty. They're all crooked. We should kick them out. Is that a realistic, a fair analysis of what's gone on?
I don't think it's either realistic or fair. I think that you've got to try to operate the way most Western democracies do, and that's by the rule of law. And if they have rules in their charter, or there's an understanding that there has to be really evidence beyond a shadow of a doubt, which was what we found in track and field, from those other federations, I mean, you can go to the IOC with that overwhelming evidence, as did the IAAF and CIPCO. I think that they really have to err on the side of the athletes that in those sports that are clean, even in that federation, until they have, again, overwhelming evidence to the contrary. And because this happened so late, and WADA really dragged their feet on this for months and months and months, on the eve of the Olympic Games, it's bad enough that this is in the news, and it really does put another taint on the Olympic Games. Enough already that their facilities are apparently not really ready, and the Olympic Village, there's problems, and the security issues, and Zika, and everything else, you know, marring this first Olympic Games in South America. But I think that they took the safe way out. A lot of people would say cop out. I don't know if I would go that far, but I think they took the safe way out. Thankfully, the IAAF is all over this back last fall, and had the Russians suspended in November. So we were way ahead of the curve. And I think that that these investigations need to continue so that before the 2018 Winter Games, we can suspend those federations that are involved with this kind of doping. And then by 2020 in Tokyo, either things get cleaned up or entire delegations are thrown out of the Olympic Games. It's a pretty big slap. And I think he's going to need to take something like that to send a very, very strong message that we're not going to fool around.
Dwight, I would suggest, after many, many times dealing with the IOC, IOC wants the show to go on regardless. When you look ahead, we now have Beijing running a Winter Games, and the Americans are going to come back in as hosts probably in 28 of a Summer Games. They're going to be bidding for more. I don't think the IOC could ban countries outright, because what if it's discovered in the future that China is doing some of the same, or the Americans are doing some of the same, or some potential host country is guilty of what Russia allegedly was guilty of. I can see why the IOC wouldn't take the giant step here.
Oh, that's easy. I mean, this is business. Let's face it. The Olympic Games is athletic Christmas.
Right.
And the IOC hates all of this stuff, of course. You know, they're the beneficiaries of the first third of any money up front for TV rights and everything else. This is a huge, huge business. But when you go back to that same thing, let's take doping off the table. Let's just take another controversy. You know, Beijing did host the 2008 Summer Games And there was nothing but enough evidence that they had put underage gymnasts
of course
on the floor yeah in the Olympic Games, and Rogo refused to act. And so that tells you which, you know, side of the bread the butter is on for these folks. They would all love for there to be no doping and be no age issues and all these other things, but it's real world. And as I said, athletic Christmas notwithstanding, things do happen. And I think that, again, the IAAF was out in front of this. We were able to get the Russian Track and Field Federation suspended for the Olympic Games. Big slap in the face. And unfortunately for many athletes in that system, if they were clean or are clean, as Yelena Isinbayeva is screaming and yelling that she is and is going as far as she can to try and get included, that's a shame. But, you know, it's just as big a shame for all the Western athletes that didn't go to the Moscow Games in 1980 and all of those Eastern Bloc countries' athletes right who had no say over the ridiculous Russian boycott of the 84 Games in Los Angeles. It's unfortunate that sports and politics are forever entwined, but they are. And when you add all these other issues like doping, it just becomes a bigger and bigger problem, and I hate to see this. I think that the public becomes very, very disillusioned over this, and a lot of athletic dreams, Olympic dreams, and I'm certainly one of those kids who had Olympic dreams. It gets tainted, and it gets besmirched, and I think it's unfortunate. But you know what? The media being what it is, and it's much more pervasive now than it was back in the 70s and 80s when I came up. This information comes out. This information is disseminated, and if it makes it so that we have a cleaner athletic environment, then I guess in the long run, the ends justify the means. But while we're in the storm, it is terribly detrimental to the whole Olympic movement, and I really fear for it going forward in a positive way sometimes.
Well, and that raises the other issue, and that is, you alluded to it earlier, and that is the situation in Rio, and we've been hearing horror stories for months now about their preparations for the games and water conditions and Zika virus and now, you know, the Australian delegation pulling their athletes out of the Olympic Village because it's not ready. And we don't know what else everybody's going to find once they get there. You know, when all is said and done in Rio, and now a good portion of the Russian delegation isn't going to be there because they got caught cheating. And you know, you would know yourself, there are going to be a significant number who say, well, the Russians got caught, but how many others have gotten away with it? What is the future of the Olympic Games if Rio is a disaster?
Well, I do worry about that. I mean, I would have felt back maybe 10, 20 years ago that I would never see an Olympic Games in a South American country or in an African country. And I was a vice president of the U.S. Olympians at the time that those bids were being made back in 2009. And when I saw the four bids, I went, oh, my God, this Brazil bid is fantastic. Gosh, I might be wrong. And lo and behold, of course, they got it. At the time, they were, you know, they were one of the BRIC nations. They were just economically going crazy. They had the rights to World Cup. They had Pan Am Games in 2007, which they did a very, very fine job. And I thought, you know what? Maybe they can pull this off. Well, in the meantime, there's been a lot of political upheaval, economic swing, whether you like them or not, and now their economy is down. They got a lot of problems. That World Cup absolutely devastated them economically. Mm-hmm. And now here they are, they're going to hosting the Olympic Games. We're on the eve of them, basically. I saw a story this morning that said the Aussies were moving into the Olympic Village today, so maybe things got taken care of to their satisfaction. But no, I agree with you. I think that, number one, I pretty much am convinced that I won't see another Olympic Games in South America in my lifetime. But I think that it does pull into question, you know, what do you really have to do in order to host these things? I think that LA has a very good chance of hosting the 2024 Olympic Games. We'll find that out late next year as they're awarded 7 years in advance. I think it's time for the movie in North America again. We have a lot of the facilities already. We can renovate some, so I don't think there will be the financial impact that there is for a lot of these cities who pretty much have to build facilities from scratch. But still, you know, as a 10 and a 14-year-old kid, I still remember how I felt when I realized what the Olympic Games were, and at 14 thinking, okay, I want to be in the next ones, which was, of course, a ridiculous dream that was realized. I was in the next ones, and I hate to take that from any young person. I really do, any more than I like it when a kid becomes old enough to realize that Christmas is a little different than they've been made to believe. I feel the same way about it, and I think that that's something we want to try and save, if we can, in whatever way we can. because I think it's an important thing. Kids need to have dreams that can be realized, and they certainly need to be able to dream. But there's a lot of things wrong with the Olympic movement, and I hope that the IOC realizes that and makes moves to try and fix the things that they can fix.
Yeah, they can't fix everything.
Cheaters are always ahead of the testers, you guys. I mean, we all know that, and we just can't do anything about that. We can be diligent. We can save samples. We can retest. But even the ones that get caught 8 years after their, we can't compel them to return the money. We can't have a ceremony that honors the people who were rightfully recipients of those medals. I mean, there's just so much wrong with it. You can taint their legacy, and you make it very difficult for them to explain the concepts of honesty and integrity to their children. But really, there's nothing more that you can do about that than that. And I'm sorry, I don't have an answer. I wish I did, but I don't.
Go back to your jumping days. You won bronze, I believe, 72 and 76. And I believe an East German jumper won silver. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was gold. But did you know at the time, or did you suspect at the time, that this guy might have had a hot supper? Or was it just one of those things you were in your focus and you didn't think about the others?
Well, I was an 18-year-old naive kid in Munich, right, that competed after the massacre.
Right.
And I was a Christian kid then, and I'm a Jewish kid now. So my whole way of looking at things would have been completely different, even at 18 and being naive politically. I was beaten by an Estonian who was on the Soviet team, and an East German with silver. They both straddle jumped, and I was the only flop style jumper that won a medal. I had no idea. No, I remember having a discussion and being part of a meeting at UCLA where our coach brought up the word steroids the first time I ever heard the word, and it was about, I didn't know what it was. I had to ask what he was talking about. I was 17 at the time, and I didn't feel like it was anything that affected me. It seemed to be directed at the throwers, but that, you know, there'd be a zero tolerance over it, and I really heard nothing more about it after that, until I became a little older and a little more worldly and international competitor, and you know, I was competing against Soviets a lot, East Germans less so, because it was very, very restrictive where they would send them in the mid to late 70s.
Sure.
But my philosophy has always been pretty much this. I can control the things I can control, which means I can control what I do, what I eat, what I take, how I train, how I approach the event from a marketing perspective, an advertising perspective. You know, I decided to take the Muhammad Ali route, and it served me very, very well. And I can't control what other people do or what they're compelled to do. You know, I do give some of these kids a little bit of a pass in that, in East Germany especially. You know, the only chance of having any kind of a life was to be an international class athlete. And they said, hey, we're going to inject this or we'll take these vitamins. You didn't say no. And I think during the Cold War, pretty much the same thing in the Soviet bloc. And I think things have not changed so much differently, except that those athletes have some more freedom than they did. But they are still, I think, compelled to have these substances administered to them. I don't think that they have full freedom like you and I enjoy. Having said that, however, you can always go, you know, I don't think I want to do that. And if you aren't doing that, then maybe you aren't on that team because you're not chosen, not just because you're not good enough or you don't put up the good enough time, because you're not a part of the program, you're not chosen.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a choice to
Hard
make,
call.
A life choice to make.
Yeah.
Imagine being Daria Klishna, and before Stepanova was being told, no, you will not be participating because you did serve a ban. Imagine Daria Klishna. I hope she has no loved ones or family living in Russia,
right,
because she's going to be the last person that is going to be welcomed back there if she takes part in these Olympic Games under a neutral flag.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine her life. Her life is over inside the Soviet or inside Russia.
Yeah,
her
you assume so. Yeah. Last question before we let you go. One of the things that I have opined on occasion here, given the economics of running Olympic Games, and you know, we're now, if Rio turns out to be a problematic, we're coming off of Winter Games in Sochi, which wasn't necessarily problematic, but what was ridiculously expensive, unduplicatable. One of the things that I've suggested is maybe it's time for the Olympic movement, when they award games to a city, to award two sets of games simultaneously. In other words, for example, Vancouver hosted the Winter Games here in Canada in 2010. What about at the same time saying, all right, 8 years from now, we're going to go back to Vancouver. So they would get 10 and 18. Whoever else, you know, London got 12, London would then get 20. The concept being that the great cost is in building the facilities. I know there are other costs, but the great cost is in building those facilities. And I think 8 years later, those facilities are perfectly capable of staying intact and being used for a second series of games, which would, in theory, reduce the cost maybe by as much as, maybe not half, but by 40% at the very least. Your thoughts on that idea? Is there anything wrong with that notion?
No, I think that some of the facilities obviously are relatable. You know, basketball and figure skating. Obviously, you can use the same facility for those things if you make the facility that way. I mean, if you already have a hockey team in the building and a basketball team in the building, then yeah, I think that you could amortize your costs. And let's face it, the costs of hosting Olympic Games are outrageous. But the biggest single cost is security.
Right.
So you would still have to be, you know, upgrading your security facilities and hiring staff and all those other things. But no, I think that has I think it has merit.
Yeah.
Absolutely, especially with countries that are organizing committees or cities who are really pretty much having to produce stadia from the ground up. It certainly does. You know, if you're in Los Angeles, you know, where do we have the Winter Games here? I mean, Squaw Valley is where we've had them previously. That's
right.
A long way from Los Angeles, so I don't think you're not sharing facilities in any significant way there. But I think we've got to do something, because it's going to make it very difficult financially. It would be almost eliminate almost every major city in the world to host these things. And a lot of their citizens who want no part of it.
Right.
In this country, I can tell you, and after your Montreal experience, and I can tell you that Canada would be very unlikely to not vote in a ballot measure to say, hey, there will be no government money spent on this. We've already seen this movie.
Yeah. It's a fascinating topic. I assume you're going down to Rio, are you?
I am. I'm going to be working for ESPN International, who has the broadcast rights, unbeknownst to me until March, to the 20 Caribbean nations. So they have hired me as an overall Olympic analyst for the first week in the studio. And then once the athletics events start on the 12th of August, I will be, along with Felix Sanchez and Grace Jackson, covering track and field out at the stadium. I'm going to be doing play-by-play. So finally, I'll be
great.
Running races at the Olympic Games. I'm very excited.